Right, we're beginning here about the two dots at the bottom of Membum and Bet. The Mishnah says, "Shukonekto chashud al shvua." If the individual is suspect for taking a shvua, and we saw that the possibilities of what he could be suspect on was shvuat eidut, shvuat abigadon, and the most troubling of them is vafilu shvuat shav. That shvuat shav also disqualifies him. My afilu shvuat shav. What does it mean? Even a shvuat shav. It says, "Lo mi bayi kamar." Not only. Lo mi bayi hanach. Deit behuk pirat mamon. When it comes to shvuat eidut and shvuat pikadon that involve not only a problematic shvua but also a denial of a monetary obligation, elo afilu ha'anami. Even this case of shvuat shav, pirat devarim ve'al mahu, where it's just a denial of a fact, there's no monetary issue that's involved. Lo mehemet, he's not believed. Ve'litnei nami shvuat bitui. What about shvuat bitui? Why isn't that included as well? If we're worried about this individual just taking shvuat sheker, shvuat bitui can also result in a shvuat sheker. Kiktani shvuat dechika mishtabo b'shikra kamishtabo. The shvuat that are mentioned here are shvuat that at the moment the person takes them, they are false. Which means by shvuat eidut, shvuat hapikadon, the information is known already. They're denying a monetary claim or denying knowing eidut. At the time that he takes the shvua, he knows that there's something wrong. Shvuat shav, again, is something that's so obvious that when he takes the shvua, he's definitely taking a shvuat sheker. Aval shvuat bitui, kada meymar, debekushta kamishtaba, lo tani. By shvuat bitui, the person takes the shvuat bitui, we're not certain that he's going to violate the shvua. He's taking a shvua, indicating that he will do something in the future. When he violates the shvua later on, it's not necessarily because he takes lightly the shvua, or he took the shvua falsely. It simply is Yitzer got the better of him at that time. Gemara says that works well. Tinach ochal velo ochal. That's true when you take a shvua at bitui for the future, because then at the moment you take the shvua, there's no knowing whether you will or not violate that shvua. On the other hand, achalti velo achalti ma'ika lemeimar. When you're taking a shvua at bitui about the past, the information is known at that moment, and it's the equivalent of a shvua sheker, a shvua shav. Should have the same status. So then what are you going to do with that? Tana shvuat shav v'chol d'domilei. Shvuat shav is a category, not a particular shvua. And that means that any shvua that is about the past, that's whether it's a shvuat bitui or a shvuat shav, will disqualify you in this case. And again here, the disqualification is despite the fact that we don't have Rala Briot. We only have Rala Shamayim. In the case of Shvuat Eidut and Shvuat HaPikadon, you have someone who's Rala Briot. He's willing to steal money, deny Eidut, or hurt somebody in a court case. Plus, he's taking a Shvua, which is Rala Shamayim. That's the disqualification over here. In the case of Shvuat Shav, we only have Rala Shamayim. There's a person who's willing to take a Shvua improperly, but he doesn't necessarily mean that he's willing to steal money, or he's willing to do something to other parties. And that's the Chiddush over here. Even though he's only Ra Lashamayim, we still disqualify him from taking a Shvua. The Balei HaTosafot over here deal with two issues. One is the issue of the Gemara in Sanhedrin speaks about disqualifications for Eidut. It's a Machloket Abayin Rav over there. It's one of the cases where we paskin like Abaye. When a person is an Avaryan, is a violator who eats Nevelot Lahachis. Eats nevelot, not because his yetzer got the better of him, but because he wants to demonstrate that he doesn't follow the Torah. Over there, Abaye says he's pasul eidut. Rava says that he's kasher, because Rava requires what's called rasha dechamas ba'inan. Only someone who is monetarily a rasha disqualifies him from eidut, because they were worried about his integrity when it comes to dealing with monetary matters and other individuals. So because he doesn't want to keep halacha of nevelot, that doesn't affect his integrity with regards to monetary matters with other parties. So Rava says he's fine. Abaye says he's disqualified. So even though Rava does not disqualify people if they are just ra lashamayim, that if someone takes a shvuat shav, then he's not disqualified from eidut. Because in a case where he's eating nevelot achis, he says he's kasher le'eidut, then why over here should it be nifsal from a shvuat shav, which is also just ra l'shamayim, and disqualified from taking a shvuah? So the Balei Tosafot want to understand, how do you reconcile that? So why don't we say the same thing there? Just like shvuat shav doesn't disqualify you from eidut, so too over here. So the Eishlamar dehotam gabi eidut, makshirin nishba l'shav, came into law of a rasha de chamas. Over there, shvuat shav lacks rasha de chamas. It lacks the issue of theft, or lack of monetary integrity, that's missing, which is essential to Eidut. So that, by Shvat Shav, it's not going to disqualify you from testifying. V'hocha shukvar rala briyot, imu mishaker v'kufer mamon, ukvar minishba l'shav, ari rala shamayim, ilcheyach chavi pasul l'shvua. The way Tosafot phrases it is, listen, we know this guy is already questionable with regards to Shamayim because he took a Shvat Shav. Now he's coming to court, and we have the possibility that he's lying about whatever monetary matter it is. You combine the two, and now you have a possibility of Ra'ah L'Shamayim and Ra'ah L'Briyot. So how can we believe Ishvuah? Because Ishvuah is trying to dispel the fact that he is now not only Ra'ah L'Shamayim, but also Ra'ah L'Briyot. Over here, the issue at hand is a Ra'ah L'Briyot issue. So if we're mitzaref, the questions about his integrity in this case, vis-a-vis the other party, plus his Ra'ah L'Shamayim, then it's going to turn out, at this point, he's already Rala Briot and Rala Shamayim, and we won't believe him in the Shvuah. That's the way Tosafot phrased it. Again, when we learned the Mishnah, mentioned before, with that point of a Shvuah, is to verify, through the Shem Hashem, that what you're saying is true. It's a lie detector test. It's something that we believe people will not play around with, or toy with. The problem is this guy already showed that the Shvuah is not a serious matter for him. The Shvuah Shav for him, he was willing to take, even though that's a violation of the Yisur Min HaTorah. Once a person demonstrates that, then we lose the ability to use it as a mechanism to verify the individual's statement. And I think that's possibly why Shvuah Shav impacts on Shvuah, maybe not on Eidut. It just shows that that mechanism is no longer valid with this individual, as opposed to Eidut. Shvuah Shav is not necessarily impactful when a dude, because a dude has to do with Hamas, whether the guy's a thief, whether the guy will be bent by money, or will do things because of money. Ochel nevelot achis is not a monetary issue, it's a religious issue, where he's demonstrating that he doesn't care about. But that doesn't mean that he's willing to steal from people, that he's gonna lie when it comes to monetary matters. Those are two different issues. And I think that's maybe the reason behind Shvuah. And then the other thing is that the Baal Tosfot says, Kan ratzu l'dakdek, demisha var l'cherim, lo yipasel l'shvuah. Someone who violates a cherim should not be disqualified shvuah. Kevin d'shat kabbalat cherim, igal meimra b'kushta mishtabo. Because maybe when he accepted the cherim, he was telling the truth. Meaning that shvuah bitoy says that when at the time you take the shvuah, you intended for it to be truthful, and you intended to abide by it. Later on, your yetzer got the better of you, so you violated. So what the Baal Tosfot are saying, well, you could say the same thing by a cherem. Person took the cherem. When he took the cherem, he expected to keep it. Later on, when he violates it, doesn't mean that that person does not abide by a cherem or does not keep his shvuah. So if that case is when he took the shvuah, he intended to keep it, and then later on he violates it, why isn't that like shvuah bitul? The Rabbeinu Tam says something very interesting. He says he is pasul. Balach lo kamar ela delo tani perish delo kamari b'midi de kushta mishtaba. It's not dealing with things like that, where you told the truth when you took a shvuah, but that doesn't mean you're not disqualified. That's a very interesting reading of the Gemara. If you read the Gemara at face value, you would have said that if you took a shvuah bitui and then later on violated it, it wouldn't be a problem at all, meaning that you would be allowed to take a shvuah. All Rabbeinu Tam says is, this Gemara is justifying why this is not found in the Mishnah. But in the end, the Gemara agrees that you're pasul. If you take a shvuah bitui and you violate it, that you are pasul. We read the Gemara as being that these are factual statements. Rabbeinu Tam is just saying it's explaining why that was absent in the Mishnah, but not telling you that the din is different. The din is actually the same, and if you violate the Shvuah Bitui later on, you would be pasul the Shvuah. Although Rashi makes it clear that he believes that if you violate a Shvuah Bitui, that you're still kasher to take a Shvuah. But the Rivash, and it's also found in a Shuta Rashbo as well, believes that even though Rashi says you're kasher the Shvuah, you are still pasul the Eidut. And that is because there's a higher standard for Eidut than there is for Shvuah. If you just violate a lav or a simple lav in the Torah, that does not disqualify you from a Shvuah. On the other hand, with regards to Nemanut and by Eidut, that violation of a lav will disqualify you because he's not classified as a chashud here, but he still is in violation of a lav of the Torah, which makes you into a rasha, and that disqualifies you from Eidut. And you can see that distinction made by Rabbi Akiva Eiger in Choshen Mishpat, Siman Lamed Dalet, that there is this different threshold for being pasul l'shvuah than there is for pasul l'eidut. Therefore, they believe that even though Rashi thinks that you are not pasul the shvua over here, unlike the Rabbeinu Tam, you still will agree that you will be pasul the edut. Right now, the Gemara continues with the Mishnah of other people who are disqualified because they are chashud. Haya achad mehem misachek bekubya. One of them is a gambler. Ha tu lamali. Why do I need these other items to be mentioned in the Mishnah? You already told me that someone who is chashud ashwa flips to the other side. So what's the point of mentioning these? Tana psula doraita, tani psula derabanan. The Mishnah is telling you that not only is this applicable when the psul that disqualifies him from taking the shvua is a psul d'oraita, the way that the Rabbeinu Hananel suggests over here, the psul d'oraita is chashud al shvua, as well as malve b'ribit, person who lends out with ribit, which is also a psul d'oraita, though that also could be psul d'rabanan. And the other items that the Mishnah is telling you, not only in d'oraita, but also in d'rabanan, there you're also disqualified. An example of a psul d'rabanan is misachek bekubya. So the simple way to read it is to say that the first example of the chashud al shvua is a psul d'oraita. And these additional items are basically lifted out of the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that makes the person pasul d'edut mid d'rabanan. And therefore all the remaining ones are psul d'rabanan, including malve b'ribit. And even though they involve monetary violations min haTorah, whether it is ribit or sochare shvi'it, they're still only pasul midrabanan, because midoraita, you're only tifsal le'idut when you are an eid chamas, when you're doing something that involves theft or gazlanut outright. So these monetary violations are pasul you midrabanan, even though they involve isurim doraita. Or you have to say that the shvua sheker, malve b'ribit, sochare shvi'it are considered to be doraita, and misachek b'kubya, mafriche yonim, are psulim derabanan. And Rashi says over here, Misachek mikubia gazlan derabanan hu. He's a thief, mi derabanan. Tamrinan asmachta lo kanya. We believe that when you have a kinyan that involves someone's not being certain that they're going to lose the money, or they're relying on the fact that they're not going to lose the money, that's not a full-fledged kinyan, and therefore he becomes a gazlan mi derabanan. That gazlan mi derabanan is what disqualifies him over here. Now this is Rashi, l'shita to, if you remember back on Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, who said the problem, Mesachek Bekubya, is the Asmachta problem. There's a machloket in the Mishnah and Sanhedrin as to whether Asmachta is the issue. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's Mipnei She'enu Asuk Be'ishuvo Shel Olam. That's the problem. Many of the Rishonim paskin, like Rabbi Yehuda, that the problem of gambling is Mipnei She'enu Shel Olam, and not because of Asmachta Lo Kanya. Rashi, both here and earlier in the Masechta on Lamed Aleph, says that the problem is that Asmachta Lokanya, seemingly paskening like the Tanakam or the Rabbanon against the Rabbi Yehuda in that Mishnah. Ayushtehem chashudim, if they are both suspect of taking a shvua. Amalei Rovla Rav Nachman, heichi tnan. What is written in the Mishnah in terms of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi's position? We saw in the Mishnah, Samachloket, Rabbi Meir says Yochloku, Rabbi Yossi says Chaz HaShvua Limkoma. Which opinion belongs to whom? Amalei lo yadano, says, I don't know. He says, Hilchot Amai, who is the halacha like? Lo yadano, I don't know. Now, what's interesting is, even after Rav Nachman says he doesn't know over here, suddenly we find a quote from Rav Nachman where it seems that he does know. Itmar, Amar Rav Yossi bar Yumei, Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Yossi Omer, Yachloku. Rav Yossi says that they should spoil it. So now you have here a quote from Rav Nachman, that the author of the position of Yochloku, which in our Mishnah is attributed to Rabbi Meir, is now attributed to Rabbi Yossi. Chayitani Rav Zvid Bar Oshaya, Rabbi Yossi Omer Yochloku, to have a corroboration that Rabbi Yossi is the author of the position of Yochloku. Igid Amri Tani Rav Zvid Amar Rav Oshaya, Rabbi Yossi Omer Yochloku. So again, here now we're bringing in the reverse order. We're bringing that Rav Zvid in the name of Rav Oshaya says that Rabbi Yossi says Yochloku. Amar Rav Yossi Bar Minume, Avad Rav Nachman Uvda Yachloku. Rav Nachman actually had case law where he followed the position of Rav Yossi and he was Yachloku. He split it between them. Obviously the issue at hand here is that when you have a Machloket Rav Yossi and Rabbi Meir, Halacha Ke Rabbi Yossi. And if that's the case, it's important to know which side Rav Yossi has. If he says Yachloku, then we're going to paskin the Yachloku. And that's what it seems to be, that Rav Nachman now is supportive of that position that Rav Yossi says Yachloku. On the other hand, if Rav Yossi is the one who says Chazra Shua Limkoma, then we're going to paskin Chazra Shua Limkoma. And that's what, if you look at the top Tosafot, what I noted for you before, we say that Rav Nachman Paskin, how could he say, I don't know, and yet he's coming to a conclusion in a case? That's what Balaitos would say. That was at a later date. When Robo queried of him, he didn't know. And he must have come into the information somehow. And then based on that, he came to the conclusion in Paskin, Yachloku. Chazar Shvalim Kuma. The Mishnah says that the Shua goes back to its place, which is a somewhat of an ambiguous term. And that's why we're going to have a Machloket Amoraim as to what that means. Leichen Chazra. Where did it go back to? Amar Rabbi Ami, Rabutenu Shibavel. Our great rabbis in Bavel, Amru, Chazra Shua leSinai. It returns to Sinai. Rabutenu Shibaretz Yisrael, Amru, Chazra Shua leMechuyav La. It goes back to the party that is Chayav. So let's start with the Rabutenu Shibaretz Yisrael. If it's Chazra leMkoma, here you have someone who is a Chashur al HaShua. So we want to flip it onto the opposing party and have him be Nishba Benotel. But the problem is that Nishba Benotel is also Chashur al HaShua. So now what do you do with that Shua? Chazralim Koma goes back to the original Michuyav Bishwa. That means the party that had to take the Shwa and be Patur, he's supposed to take the Shwa, goes back to him because Midoraita, he's the one obligated in the Shwa. The fact that he can't take the Shwa now makes him Chayav to pay. So that would be the view of the Rabbeinu Shibaretz Yisrael. Chazralim Koma, we tried to solve the problem with the rabbinic flip of the Shwa to the other party. But here in this instance, it's not going to work because that guy's Chashud Shwa. It returns back to the original person that was Chayav in the Shua. He's Chashud, and that means that he has to pay now because he can't take the Shua that is incumbent upon him. The view of the Rabbi Tenu Shibavel is that Chazra Shua l'Sinai. It goes back to Sinai. The way that Rashi views it over here is the Shvuat Har Sinai. It goes back to the oath that we took at Har Sinai. Mushbavo made me Har Sinai. Those are the terms that we saw earlier in the Masechta. Shishvi al Kadosh Baruch Yisrael al lo tigzol. That Hashem commanded people not to steal. Behu yipara min hakofer mamon chaveiro. And Hashem will take care of this. Now it's in Hashem's hands. That's what it means. Chazra shvua leSinai. Aval beitin ein iskakim lo lezeh leshvua velo lepiron. But beitin's not going to intervene anymore to force a shvua or to force payment. They're out of the picture. It's now in God's hands. That's the way Rashi says it. The other way to say it is Chazra shvua leSinai means the Shua was instituted for the individual to take it. Here, neither party can take the Shua. Shua goes back to Sinai, and the Shua is no longer a relevant piece of evidence in the case. And if you can't take a Shua, then nobody does anything in the case, because it's all gone, meaning that we can't do anything. We have no solution to the problem. All right, so now the Gemara says, Rabotenu Shebivavel, who are the great rabbis of Bavel? Rab and Shmuel. Rabotenu Sheberetz Yisrael, who are the great rabbis of Eretz Yisrael? Rabbi Abba. Interesting that they're using the plural form in Eretz Yisrael, even though it only refers to Rabbi Abba. Now, the Gemara does something interesting. It's clear that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Abba did not address this issue head on. Rather, we're inferring it from something else that they said, or implying it from something else that they said, which also raises issues about the ability to reconcile between them. Rabbi Tenu Shebavel, Rab Ushmuel. Rabbi Tenu Shebavel, we said, was Rabbi Shmuel. The Tanan. We have a Mishnah. Our Mishnah. The Yitomim can only collect with a Shvua. The Mishnah says Kishen. We have a number of Shvuot that are mentioned in the Mishnayot in Ketubot, where people are obligated to take a Shvua in order to extract money. Examples that we gave there are somebody who comes to collect from Yitomim, somebody who comes to collect from encumbered property, an Almana who comes to collect after she's Pogemet Ketubata, or a divorcee that comes to collect when the Baal is not in front of us. All these people, the Mishnayot and Kudubot, they have to take a Shvua. And we say, Kashem, that they take a Shvua? B'chein ha-Yitomim lo yifru al b'Shvua. So too, Yitomim can only collect with a Shvua. V'avinan ba, miman. Who are they collecting from that they require a Shvua? Ilema milove. If it is because they are coming to collect from a debtor, avuan shakil b'lo Shvua, v'inhu b'Shvua. Their father can collect from the Loveh without a Shvua, so why should we impose upon them a Shvua to collect from the Loveh? They have a Shtar, and the father, if he showed up with the Shtar and said to the Loveh, pay me, I have a Shtar on you, nobody would say the father has to take a Shvua to substantiate his claim with this Shtar. So why now do the Yitomim have to substantiate their claim? If they have a Shtar, they should be able to collect with that Shtar. Elohochi Kamar. This is what it must mean in the Mishnah. B'chein ha-Yitomim, min ha-Yitomim. If you have Yitomim collecting from each other, that means that the creditor and the debtor have passed away, and now their children are trying to settle the accounts. So in that case, lo yifru'u ela bishvua. The Yitomim who are coming on behalf of the Malveh, they have to take a Shvua in order to substantiate their claim from their father. V'rabu Shmuel d'amrei tarvayu, lo shanu, that's only true, l'shemet Malveh b'chayelove. That's only true if the Malveh passed away first, predeceased the debtor. Avamet love b'chayev malve. On the other hand, if the debtor predeceases the creditor, kvar nitchayev malve libnei love shvua. But then the malve, the creditor, already owes the yitomim of the love a shvua. Ve'en adam morish shvua libanav. And a person cannot pass in inheritance a shvua to his children. Let's look at each of the two cases. In the case where the malve passes away first, then the Yitomim are coming to collect from the Loveh. We just said before, they don't have to substantiate their claim. If the creditor could have come with a shtar and collected from the Loveh, then his kids can come with that same shtar and collect from the Loveh. In that case, it is fine for them to come and collect without any question. In the reverse scenario, if the Loveh passes away and the Malveh is still alive, the creditor is still alive, for the creditor to collect from the Loveh's children, he's going to have to take a shvua. So it's one of the shvot that's mentioned in Ketubot. If you want to collect from Yitomim, you must take a shvua. So now the Malveh is chayav a shvua. So those are the two scenarios. The scenario where the debtor passes away, the Malveh is chayav to take a shvua to the Yitomim. In the case where the Malveh passes away and the Loveh is still alive, the children of the Malveh have no obligation of a shvua vis-a-vis the Loveh. Now the other party passes away. So now, in the case where the Malveh already had passed away, and his children had a right to collect without a shvua, now when the Loveh passes away, you have the children of the Malveh having to take a shvua to the children of the Loveh, not because of their father, but because of the fact now that the Loveh passed away. And now they're Yitomim on the other side of the transaction from them. That means that the shvua wasn't their obligation. It only came about when they were already the owners of the credit extended. And so the shvua is incumbent on them, and they can take that shvua that is incumbent upon them for the children of the Loveh. But in the reverse, where the Loveh predeceased the Malveh, the debtor passed away, the Malveh, the creditor, is still alive, now owes a shvua to the children of the Loveh. Any Yitomim, you want to collect him, he's got to give a shvua. Now when the Malveh, the creditor, passes away, his children can't take the shvua that the Malveh needed to take in this case. As Rashi says over here, Ein adam morish levanav, Mamon shumukhuyav alav shvua. He can't pass a monetary obligation that requires a shvua in order to substantiate it. Amahol v'hu mechuyav shvua, shlo yitkabalti chob zeh. Since the creditor was chayav to take a shvua that he never received payment, v'yitomim enim yecholim lishavakein. They can't take that shvua. The only shvua they can take is pagad nu abba, our father told us, or some other information which is secondhand information. And that does not work over here, because the requirement for the shvua over here is a direct shvua, that I didn't take it or I didn't receive it. And so therefore, Hazra shvua the Sinai, Ben kan lo shvua v'lo pirun. Meaning that everybody's stuck over here. You can't take the shvua. Since you can't take the shvua, there is no payment that's going to be made in this case. The way that the Rabbeinu Chananel says it, v'chol ki agavna paka milveh, that the loan basically disappears. So that's Rabbeinu Shiva Bavel. That's our rabbis in Bavel, Rav and Shmuel, who seem to indicate when you have the inability to take a shvua, then the Beit Din steps out of the case, and we don't do anything. And that's what we're saying before. Chazra, shvua the Sinai, means that Beit Din basically abdicates their role in this situation and leaves it to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the way Rashi states it. And that's what Rav and Shmuel are saying in this case as well. Rabbeinu Shberetz Yisrael, Rabbi Abba. Our rabbis in Eretz Yisrael is Rabbi Abba. This is from the Gemara earlier on Daf Lamed Bet, Av Gavra, the Chotov Nasko Mechavre, someone who stole or grabbed away a piece of metal from his friend. Ata the Kamei de Rabbi Ami, they came before Rabbi Ami to adjudicate the case. Yotiv Rabbi Abba Kamei, Rabbi Abba was present before Rabbi Ami. Tosafot over here notes there's a little inconsistency, because it says here that Rabbi Abba was sitting in front of Rabbi Ami, which indicates that Rabbi Abba was the Talmid. Yet before, it was Rabbi Ami who said, Rabbeinu Shebe'eretz Yisrael, in his reference to Rabbi Abba, which means that Rabbi Ami is calling Rabbi Abba, Rabbeinu Shebavel, or giving him the title of someone that seemingly is his Rebbe. So Tosafot says that that's not an uncommon thing, that even though Rabbi Abba was the Talmid of Rabbi Ami, that Rabbi Ami would call one of his Talmidim, Rabbeinu she-be'eretz Yisrael, and he brings cites a similar story with Rav, where he called his Talmidim Rabbeinu, although then he does run into a problem in the Gemara in Elul Mitzvot, where again it seems to be that Rabbi Ami is coming before Rabbi Abba to seek advice. And he says that the Svarim that have the Girsa of Rabbi Asi over there would make it a lot easier, that Rabbi Ami came before Rabbi Asi, even though they are peers, nevertheless, it would make more sense that he was coming to one of his peers to seek advice, rather than going to Rabbi Abba, his Talmid, to seek advice. A single aid comes and corroborates the fact that this guy grabbed it away from him. Says, yeah, I did grab it, but it was mine. That's why I grabbed it. So Rabbi Ami says, I'm stuck now. How are we going to deal with this case? We say to the guy, go pay. There aren't two witnesses that say that he has to pay. A single witness can't be enough evidence to force the payment. How can we let him go without having to pay? There's a single aid, and a single aid generates the need for a shvua to offset that aid. So we're going to say, take a shvua to dispel the edut of the eid echad. Since he says, I do agree that I snatched it away from him, he has the status of a gazlan. And that could disqualify him for one of two reasons. One possibility is because he's a gazlan, he's no longer believed because he's now an aid chamas in a sense, and therefore he loses his ability to take, to give a dut or take a shvua. Or the way that Rashi explains it over here is that problem is he can't take the shvua that is necessary to offset the aid achat. The aid achat says that he was choteif. And now when he comes and takes the shvua, he's going to take a shvua, says, yes, I was choteif, and it was mine. But that means he's just upholding what the aid said. He's verifying what the aid said, and the shvua is not offsetting the testimony of the aid achat. We really need him to take the testimony that, no, I did not grab it away from him, and I was not a gazlan, which he can't do. That's what Rashi says, kabiach shvua, pasuk gazlan, etzol kol shvua. Ha'leka l'meimar lishtaba d'day chatap. You can't say, take a shvua that you stole your own, took your own thing. That's not the obligatory shvua. So Amalei Rabbi Abba pipes up. He was sitting in front of him. He's obligated to take a shvua and he can't take it. You got to pay. So what you see from Rabbi Abba is when you have a shvua that is incumbent upon you and you can't take the shvua, you lose the case. And basically you're going to have to pay. So now if we look back to our Mishnah, when you have a chashud al shvua, starts out with a shvua on him. That is an obligation to write up. The Rabbanan tried to intercede to solve the problem and move it to the other party. But in this particular case, the other party is also problematic. So now when we say chazra lim koma, what we're suggesting over here is by Naska de Rabbi Abba, that the shvua is obligatory on the person who's trying to be nishba v'niftar. He's the original person's chayim nishba. If you can't take the shvua, you're going to pay. And so now we're suggesting that that's what Rabbi Abba's view is. And Rav and Shmuel's view is that Chazra l'Sinai, Beit Din abdicates in a case where they can't reach a possibility of a shvua, even though there's an obligatory shvua. Since you can't take it, we just let the case dissolve. And the truth is that it's not so clear that Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Abba have to argue. And that is because they're dealing with different types of shvuot. In the case of Rav and Shmuel, they're dealing with a shvua of nishba v'notel. It's a shvua that's incumbent upon the creditor to take in order to get the money from the children of the debtor. That's a shvua that he owes to the Yatomim. Now that he can't take that shvua, what are you going to do? According to Rabbi Abba, who says Rabbi Abba is going to disagree with that? Rabbi Abba says that, oh, if you can't take a shvua, you're chayav. They're not chayav over here. They're trying to be nishba v'notel. And the conclusion of Rabbi Shmuel is you can't collect because you can't take the shvua. That's not different than Rabbi Abba. Only thing that Rabbi Abba says is that when you have an incumbent shvua to release yourself from payment, and you can't take the shvua, then you're chayav to pay. But what about the opposite, where you're nishba v'notel? Why does he have to disagree? You can see that on the Baliyat Tosafot, on the Amud Bet, in the little Ot Aleph, he says about Ktsat Kasha. There's a little Aleph in the top Tosafot from the Gra, and he says about Ktsat Kasha. The Menale L'Shas V'Samuch, the Rav Shmuel, late Lehu, the Rabbi Abba. Who says that Rav Shmuel can't agree with Rabbi Abba? Elavadai late Lehu Aisvara L'Inyan L'Shalem, L'Inyan L'Hafsid. Tosafot over here tries to make a distinction that Rav and Shmuel only have this svara, when it comes to losses, but in terms of having to pay, then they don't have this svara. And that's, he says, the tzarech iyun. He leaves it as a tzarech iyun. The Bayit Tosafot explain that mitok she'enu yachol yishava mishalem has application in both directions, which means dafra b'chashud shelo yafkiyo mimono mimeno. Only in the case here by chashud where they flip the shvua, so people don't come and just take money away from him. But in this case, in the case of Chamishim Layadana, where the Toveya can't take a Shvua, then the person who is Chayav will have to pay in that case. Because he says, the Loshna Michuyava Toveya Shvua, Loshna Michuyava Nidba Shvua. It doesn't matter whether the claimant or the defendant is Chayav Shvua. Ve'eno chod ishava oto shechayav Shvua. Mishalem hanitba. Then the defendant has to pay in all of these cases. That means, according to Rabbi Abba, the defendant will always be paying, no matter who cannot take the shvua. And that cannot be reconciled with Rav and Shmuel, who say that when the toveya is unable to be nishbav notel, he doesn't collect. He loses in that case, and therefore we can't reconcile between Rabbi Abba and Rav and Shmuel. The Balei Tosafot do raise a serious issue with regards to the Psak Halacha, which is, over here it seems that Rav Nachman believes that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah, which is Yachloku. Yet we find in other places that the Gemara concludes that Halacha ke Rabbi Abba or Naskod de Rabbi Abba. So now you have a Stira in Psak, which is that seemingly we follow Rabbi Abba's position over here. Yeah, we know in general, Bidine, Halacha k'Rav Nachman, who seems to subscribe to the position of Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot say, based on the Reeve, Eish Lamar, the Rav Nachman, Vadai, Lately, the Rabbi Abba, that Enoch Anami, that Rav Nachman and Rabbi Abba cannot be reconciled. Then the Balei Tosafot go on to ask additional questions on that position of the Reeve, which makes it difficult to sustain what he is suggesting. So therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam comes up with an alternate explanation, and he says, the Hilchot of Rav Nachman, the Gemara Yechloku G'shneim Chashudim, the Halacha is like Rav Nachman in our Mishnah, that when they're both suspect, we split it, and the Halacha is like Rabbi Abba Vinascha, and also B'chamishim Lo Yadana, in the case where he has Moda B'miksa, and he says on 50 of them, he doesn't know what to say, there the Halacha will be like Rabbi Abba, that Ein Echol Yishava Yishalem. And he explains the difference because Mishum the Shvata Toveya lo aviyala mid the Rabbanan. And the Shvata Toveya is mid the Rabbanan, the imafsid, the lo mishalem, ken sheyachol yishava. He's not going to lose out when he can't take that Shvua. Ela b'mechuyav Shvua de Oraita. Only when you're chayav a Shvua de Oraita and you can't take it, that's when you're going to lose out. But if it's a Shvua de Rabbanan of a Toveya and you can't take it, then in that case, you're not going to lose out. So that would be the Shita of Rav Nachman, as well as the Shita of Rabbi Abba. Therefore, in all the cases where you have a Toveya that can't take a Shua mid Rabbanan, he doesn't take the Shua, and the other party has to pay, because he's not going to lose out because of that. But then you have to explain our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is a case where you have a Shua d'Oraita that's being flipped onto the other party, and it's a Shua d'Rabbanan, and yet both parties are losing out. And on that he says, Ubishneim Chashudim Mafsida Toveya Chetzi. The reason Toveya loses half of it is Afagab Delo Rami Alei El Shvu De Rabbanan. Even though his Shvu is only the Rabbanan, and the other party has a Shvu De Oraita, Taima Mishum Dekan Sinan Le Defishu Chashud. We penalize him because of the fact that he is Chashud, meaning he has a problem with regards to being Chashud. It already degrades his Nemanut here, and therefore he's going to lose out on half. Ulerab Shmuel Itluhu, and Rav and Shmuel believed Afilu b'Shvud Rabbanan. Even when it comes to Shvud Rabbanan, we talk Sheni Chol Yishava Mafsid Kol. You can't take that Shvua, you lose everything. Ubishneim Chashudim, and similarly, when both of them are Chashud, Nami Mafsid Tovei Kol Chazra Shvua B'Sinai, and that will be the major difference according to this between Rabbi Abba and Rav and Shmuel, which is that according to Rabbi Abba, the din applies both to Shvuot d'Oraita and Shvuot d'Rabbanan. If they can't be taken, then the Nitbat is always the one who loses. According to Rav and Shmuel, that if you can't take a Shvua, even a Shvua d'Rabbanan, you as the Toveya will be the loser in that case. And in the end, as the Gra points out in Ot Aleph on the Amud Bet, we paskin like Rabbi Abba, Tamekailan b'Nitbak Rabbi Abba, When it comes to a shvua that is sitting on the defendant, we pass it like Rabbi Abba, if you can't take that shvua, you're going to pay. Ubitoveya, when it comes to the claimant, Kevin Sheni Yacholi Shabbat, Mafsid, Rabbi Shmuel. We pass it not like Rabbi Abba, but like Rabbi Shmuel, that the claimant then loses out. And that's how we can reconcile the psak here between passing like Rabbi Abba, and also passing like Rabbi Shmuel with regards to the Toveya, like Rabbi Abba with regards to the Nidbah. In our Mishnah, where Rav Nachman seems to pass like Rabbi Yossi of Yachloko, that's just a knas, because the Nidbah here is really the one who has to take the Shvua Do, right? Then according to Rabbi Abba, means that he should pay. We penalize the Toveya just because he's also Chashud, and that'll explain Rav Nachman's position, but it doesn't necessarily undermine either the position of Rabbi Abba or the position of Rabbi Shmuel. So, Amar Rova, Kavate de Rabbi Abba Mistavro, Rabbi Abba's position makes more sense. The Tani Rabbi Ami, now here Rabbi Ami is supportive of Rabbi Abba. Tani Rabbi Ami, Shvot Hashem Tia Ben Shneem, Shvot Hashem will be what governs between them. Velo ben ayorshim, but not between the inheritors. Hey chidami, what's the case? Ida amale manale abba biyad avicho. He says your father owed my father 100 zuz. Amale chamishim itle v'chamishim leitle. And he makes a definitive answer to that. My father paid back 50 and still owes you the remaining 50. Malihu mali avua. Why does it make a difference whether it's him or his father? In this case, they're making a definitive claim. They're modiv v'miksat. If the father was modiv v'miksat, he'd be chayav to take a shvua. Here where the yoshim are making a definitive claim, they're not saying shema, they're not saying maybe, they're making a definitive claim that their father paid back half and didn't pay back the other half. So they should have to take a shvua, and this is a shvua they should be able to take, because they're both modiv v'miksat. So why in this case would you say only the father takes a shvua, not the yoshim? That doesn't make sense. Elalav, the case must be, the amar le mana le abba biyad avicha v'amar le chamshin yadana v'chamshin lo yadana. The case where he says my father lent your father 100 zuz, and the response is my father I know already paid you back 50 of it to your father. I don't know about the other 50. He amart bishlama aviv ki I gav the mechayev. It would make sense. In that case, the father would be obligated to pay. It's the kral, the mifter gabi yorshim. Therefore, by the yorshim, we have to have a posuk to tell you the yorshim are potur. You say in that case, the father's also released. Kra gabi yorshim lomali. Then why do you need a posuk by the yorshim? What they're basically saying is, this supports Rabbi Abba's contention, that when you have an obligation to take a shvua and you can't take it, you are chayav. Let's go to the father's level. If they come to the individual and say, you owe 100 zuz. He says, listen, 50 I already paid back. The other 50, I don't know. Technically, that should obligate him in a modeh b'miksat shvua. The only problem is, he can't take the shvua that is incumbent upon him. He can take the shvua that he paid back the 50. He can't take the shvua that the other 50 he doesn't owe, because he doesn't know. So he's chayav in modeh b'miksat, and he can't take the shvua, loses the case, and has to pay the money. If that's true by the father, then you can have a pasuk that says, Shvat Hashem Tiyah Ben Shneem. It affects the two parties, but Eina Yorshim. The Yorshim are not affected by that. So even though the father in that case would have to pay, the Yorshim in that case don't have to pay. Possibly, or likely, because we don't expect the Yorshim to have that information necessarily. The father who says, yeah, I agree to 50, and I don't know about the other 50, we're suspect that he's trying to slip out of the repayment. He's trying to release himself from that repayment. On the other hand, when it comes to the Yorshim, Lo Yadana is a valid claim. It's really, the possibility is that they just don't know about the other 50. So over there, by the father, where he's modiv mixed and he can't take the shvua, we say, you gotta pay. The Torah says, by the Yorshim, they don't have to pay in that case, because that Lo Yadana is not an unreasonable claim, or it's not an unreasonable statement by them, and therefore the Yorshim would be released in that case. So this is supportive of Rabbi Abba, where if you have to take a shvua and you can't take it, you pay. And that's what we're saying here, that you have to pay in that case. Mar says, V'Rabbi Shmuel, Hai Shvuat Hashem, Maika Dar Shibe. What did Rabbi Shmuel do with that pasuk? If Rabbi Shmuel argue on Rabbi Abba, then what do they do with that pasuk? They can't explain it the same way Rabbi Abba does. They need it for this following braita. which is a bright that includes many memrot of Shimon ben Tarfon. Shimon Tarfon Omer, Shvat Hashem Tiyah ben Shnehem, L'meveid Sheshua Chala al Shnehem, tells you that the Shua has application or impact on both of them. And you can see, Tosafot referencing Yudarashi earlier in the Masechta of Ne'anash, HaMashbiah Afilu Adini Mo, the Perish Pakunches Veresh Adoyanim. And the Mashbiah is held accountable over here, even if he is right, because of the fact that he facilitated this Shvat Sheker by engaging with this person who was less than honest, or not putting up the preventative measures that would have precluded the possibility of getting to a Shvua, and therefore he carries a certain amount of blame in the Shvat Sheker of the defendant in this case. That is, the way that we've explained this before, what we saw back on Daf Lamed Tet Amud Aleph, is that when there is an obligation for a Shvua, and the individual has to take a Shvua, and it's possibly a Shvat Sheker, we blame both parties there. We blame the person taking the Shvat Sheker because he took a Shvat Sheker, and we blame the other party for facilitating a situation in which the other party has to take a Shvat Sheker. He didn't lend with Adim. He didn't do something to protect against this type of eventuality where a Shvua would be problematic. So that was the way that we had learned it in the past, which is that there's really an obligation on both parties when the Shvua is taken falsely. Here, interestingly enough, the Rabbeinu Chanano gives a different interpretation. He says, Klomar, Yifshar, Shein Echad Mehem, Al Sheker, O Atoveya, that one of them has to be lying over here. Either the claimant, Toveya Ma Shein Lo Alav, he's making a claim for something that he doesn't have entitlement to, Umashbiyah Bechinam, and therefore he's causing the other party to take up a Shvua that was unnecessary. And therefore the person taking the Shvua is taking an unnecessary Shvua because the claimant made a false claim. Or the defendant is taking a false Shvua. So the way that the Rabbeinu Chanano explains it over here is, in either case, one of the two parties is guilty. Either the defendant is guilty because he's taking a false Shvua, or the claimant is the problem here because he's making the defendant take a Shvua that was unnecessary because he made a false claim. So one of the two parties is responsible. That's the way the Rabbeinu Chanano explains it over here. But if you go back to Lamed Tet Amud Aleph, where we had this sugya before, the Rabbeinu Chanano over there explains it the way that we did before, and he says, B'shem ben Tarfon omer Shvat Hashem Tiyah ben Shnehem, Melameid Shechala al Shnehem, Perish, Al Zeh Shenishba L'Sheker, on this guy because he's lying, V'azeh Shenatan Lo B'lo Edim, and the other one because he gave it without the Edim, V'garam Lo Lichpor V'lishava, and he caused him to deny it and take the Shvua. So the Rabbeinu Chananel back on Lamed Tet gives the more classic explanation that they're both guilty over here. Even though only one of them is lying or taking the Shvua B'Sheker, they're both guilty. In our case over here, the Rabbeinu Chananel says either party is guilty, not both of them. One of the two of them is doing something wrong in this case. All right, so now we have other memorot that are brought Shimon ben Tarfon, which don't necessarily relate to our Gemara, but they're all brought in this bright in the name of Shimon ben Tarfon. Shimon ben Tarfon Omer, Azara Lokei Vachar Noef Minayim. How do you know that there is a restriction not only from engaging in Niyuf, in adultery, but there is also a restriction against facilitating niyuf, or facilitating adultery. Talmud Omar, lo tinaf, lo tanif. It's not only you can read it lo tinaf, which means do not engage in adultery, it also lo tanif. Do not cause others to engage in adultery, or do not facilitate the violation of adultery. And you can see that in Rabbeinu Chanano, where he says, Perush, mechino makom benashim liniyuf. So he is a facilitator of this adultery that is going on. And in that way, it somewhat connects to the first member of Shimon ben Tarfon, which is, in both cases, you are a facilitator of a problem. The first case, you're a facilitator of a Shvat Sheker. In the second case, you're a facilitator of Niyuf. And that's what Shimon ben Tarfon says, that it's a lav to engage in activities that facilitate other people's abilities to engage in adultery. And this is a pasuk about the Meraglim, when they came back and gave the report about Eretz Yisrael. Moshe's retelling it in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. It says, "Vitaragnu ba'olechem." After you got this news, you went and you cried and wept or complained in your tents. Shimon ben Tarfon Omer, what is the meaning of "Vitaragnu"? He says it's really an acronym for the following. It's a contraction of these two words, which is tartem, you went and investigated, viginitem, and then you disparaged Eretz Yisrael, bi'oholo shel makom, the tent of God, meaning the place of God, which is Eretz Yisrael. And as the Rabbeinu Chananel points out, v'adichtiv bo'oleichem bikinui hu, that is, euphemistically, it's speaking about oleichem, but really means the Oel Hashem. So that's what it means, v'teragnu bo'oleichem, you investigated and then disparage the place where God resides, where the Shekhinah is present, and that is Eretz Yisrael. Adanara gadol nahar prat, which is also mentioned in Dvarim, also mentioned in Sefer Bereishit, which is that Nahar Prat is known as the Nahar HaGadol. The problem is that if you go to Bereishit, in the beginning it lists the four Neharot that come out of Eden, and Nahar Prat is the Nahar HaRevi, it's the last of the Neharot. There it seems to be the smallest of the Neharot. So then why is it that when the Torah speaks about Nahar Prat, it's called the Nahar HaGadol? Shimon ben Tarfon Omer, Karev Legabe Dehina V'Yedhein. If you get close to the Anointed One, it rubs off on you and you become anointed as well. It says that the one who is anointed with oil, hin, it's a liquid measure, but the hina, as Rashi points out, is someone who is anointed with oil. So if you stick close to the one anointed with oil, the oil rubs off on you and then you become anointed as well. So that means that if you hang out with people of authority and power, then you also carry a certain amount of authority and power because of your closeness to those individuals. And similarly over here with regards to Eretz Yisrael, when Nahar Prat is mentioned with Eretz Yisrael, which is the great chosen land, then it becomes a Nahar HaGadol because of its association with Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael rubs off on the Nahar Prat to make it into the Nahar HaGadol. Rabbi Shmuel Tano, Eved Melech Kemelech. And Rabbi Shmuel is a similar type of pidgam saying, which says the same thing, which is the servant of the king is like the king. Meaning that the ones who work for the king are close to the king, have a status of a certain amount of authority because of their closeness to the king or their relationship with the king. Right now we're moving on to the next case in the Mishnah, which is a chenvani al pinkaso. A chenvani on his ledger. Tanya, Amar Rabbi, Torach Shvua Zo Lama. Why do we need someone to take this Shvua? Remember in the case in the Mishnah, the Balabayit owes money to his Poalim. He tells the chenvani, please pay the Poalim on my behalf. Either give them credit in the store or pay them cash. Then the Poalim come back and say, we never received anything from the storekeeper. And the storekeeper comes to the Baal Bayit and says, pay me, I paid your Poalim, I paid your workers over here. So the Mishnah says, both of them take a Shvua. The Chenvani takes a Shvua to claim his money from the Baal Bayit that he paid to the Poalim. And the Poalim take a Shvua to the Baal Bayit. They never received anything from the Chenvani, never owes them money, now he has paid both of them. And this is Rashi l'shitato, which says, Shneim nishbaim notnim mi bala bayit, that they both take a shvua and collect from the bala bayit, and that's the way we've been explaining all along. Although based on the girsa in our Mishnah, which is, hu nishbaim notel, vein nishbaim notlin, doesn't make it clear who the shvua is being taken towards. Rashi makes it clear, based on his girsa, that both of them are taking the shvua to the bala bayit. On the other hand, the Ritva and others suggest that either they take a shvua to the chenvani, and then collect from him, and then he goes and takes a shvua to the Baal HaBayit and collects, or vice versa. The Chenvani takes a shvua to the Baal HaBayit and collects, and then the Poalim take a shvua to the Chenvani and collect from him. Benanas in the Mishnah says, "Bai shvat sheker lamali, why do I need this false shvua? One of the two parties is definitely lying, and therefore you're going to end up with a shvat sheker." Rabbi makes a similar statement here, has a similar sentiment, which is, "Torach shvu zu lama." What's the point of this shvua when we know that one of the parties is lying over here? The reason that the Mishnah does this is because the Baal HaBayit has a relationship with the Poalim, the Baal HaBayit has a relationship with the Chenvani. But he then forced a relationship between the Chenvani and the Poalim, who don't necessarily trust each other, or necessarily have any reason to believe the other one bishvua. And so they don't want to deal with each other, they both want to deal with the Baal HaBayit, which put him in this predicament where we allow them both to take a shvua and collect from him. Although, as Rashi points out, Rabbi's position isn't clear. He's saying, I don't understand why you bring both sets of claimants here and have them both take a shvua, because you end up with a shvua chav, but he doesn't propose a solution. So it's not clear if he subscribes to Ben Nasis' solution in the Mishnah, which is neither of them should take a shvua, or the alternative girsa that the Ran had in the Mishnah, which is, who notel bishvua, ve'inotlin shelo b'shvua, or the chenvani should lose out with the shvuat ha'poalim. Poalim should have the right to take a shvua and say that they didn't receive anything, and then the baal bayit would just pay the poalim and leave the chenvani out in the cold. So it's not clear what Rabbi's proposition is, although he's raising the same issue that Benanas raised in the Mishnah. Primarily, Rabbi Chia, Tanina. We have our Mishnah tells us Shneim nishbayim v'notleim mi-baal ha'bayit, that they both take a shvua and they collect from the baal ha'bayit. So here the Tanina is according to Rashi, who says that this is exactly what was written in the Mishnah, which is Shneim nishbayim v'notleim mi-baal ha'bayit. According to the other Rishonim who have different girsa in the Mishnah, then you wouldn't say over here that he's bringing a braita and not our Mishnah over here, because the Mishnah said, no nishba v'notel, v'hein nishbayim v'notlin, but it doesn't say, shneim nishbayim v'notlin mi-baal ha'bayit. Kibla mine, or lo kibla mine? Did Rabbi accept this from Rabbi Chia, or did he not accept it? Tashma, let us look at this. The Tanya, we have a braita. Rabbi Omer, po'alim nishbayim v'chenvani, the po'alim take a shvua to the storekeeper. Wait a minute. In our Mishnah, the storekeeper doesn't have anything to do with the Shvua. If it was the case that he accepted, Rabbi Chia says, then the Poalim should have taken a Shvua, not to the Chenvani, but to the Baal HaBayit. Going to Rashi, the Shvua is going to the Chenvani, and not to the Baal HaBayit, which means it sounds like the Chenvani is going to lose out. According to the other Shitot, who say that that is one of the Shvuot that is taken from the Poalim to the Chenvani, makes it sound like here that he only takes the shvuah to the chenvani and not the chenvani taking shvuah to the baal ha'bayit. And that's why it sounds like Rabbi does not agree with the conclusion of our Mishnah. So it seems like Rabbi did not accept this position of Rabbi Chia. Amarova, no, you didn't understand. Po'alim nishba'im lebaal ha'bayit b'ma'amad chenvani. Doesn't mean that the po'alim are taking the shvuah to the chenvani. The chenvani doesn't really care about their shvuah. He has no relationship with them. He doesn't necessarily believe them. So what it means is that they have to take a shvua to the baal ha'bayit, but the chenvani has to be present at that time. So that they should be embarrassed in front of him. They're not going to lie to the face of the chenvani who paid them, if he really did pay them. So we want them to take a shvua in front of the chenvani, telling the baal ha'bayit that they never got paid, so that, first of all, if they are lying, they're not just lying to the baal ha'bayit, they're lying in front of the chenvani who knows the truth. And that will cause them to not necessarily lie or be reticent about lying, because the person who knows is standing right there. And we said before, the Baal Tosfot believe, in adam is shaker lepanav mishu shiodea. People don't lie to the face of someone who knows the absolute truth. That's how Rava rereads that bright of Rabbi to make it that he did accept Rabbi Chia's position, and it's not necessarily that he disagrees with it. Itmar. Now we have a case that Amoraim discuss. Shtei kitei edim amakshidot zo et zo. You have two sets of edim that contradict each other. So it's very similar to our case here. You have a case here where two people are taking a shvua, and clearly one of them is lying. Similarly over here, if you have two sets of edim testifying about a matter, one says he killed him, one says he didn't kill him, one of those two sets of edim is lying. Amar Ravuna, zo ba bifnei atzma, umeida v'zo ba bifnei atzma meida. Each one of these set of edim can testify in a different case, as long as they're both not involved in the case. Meaning that if one set of edim goes to another case, we will believe them, even though it's a possibility that they are liars and they are pasul de edut. And the other set of edim can go into another case, and they can testify. As long as both sets are not involved, for instance, if you have one person from one set of edim, and another person from the other set of edim get together and testify in a case, there for sure we will not believe their testimony, because now you have one from each kat edim, and for sure you have an edut psula here, because one of the two parties is pasul. So as long as we keep them separate, Rav Huna believes that they can testify as long as they don't come together. Chista says, what do I need to deal with lying edim? These guys are disqualified. Doesn't matter if they speak alone. Doesn't matter if they speak together. Shnei malvin, u'shnei lovin, u'shnei shtarot, hainu plugdayu. A circumstance or a situation where you have two creditors, two debtors, and two shtarot, that is the machloket between Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Here you have two separate cases completely. They are signed on a shtar, evidencing a loan from a creditor to a debtor. One set of edim is signed on this loan that involves creditor A and debtor A, and the other set of edim are signed on another shtar that is between creditor B and debtor B. That's their machloket. Rav Huna says, since the edut are separate, can't be posel either a set of edim because we just don't know. Therefore, they're considered to be kasher in the case. Each one of them will be considered kasher on the shtar that they're signed on. Rav Chisda says that they're both safek sheker, and therefore we disqualify both of them. And that is exactly the machlok between Rav Huna and Rav Chisda in that case. Now the Gemara is going to introduce additional cases where possibly they won't disagree. Malveh v'loveh, if you have a creditor and a debtor, ushnei shtarot, and two documents. So it's the same creditor and same debtor, but they have shtar A and shtar B, which means that there are two loans outstanding between the same creditor and debtor. Over there, even Rav Huna will agree, yad bala shtar latachtona. The creditor has to only collect from the lower of the two shtarot. We know for sure one of these two shtarot are psulim, because you have two sets of edim, which we know one of the two is pasul. We just don't know which one is pasul. But since here the relationship is between two parties who are dealing with both shtarot, so creditor to debtor, with two different shtarot, one of those two shtarot is not valid, and we'll have to assume that it's the lower of the two. It's a safek, we don't know. So the lower of the two, we'll be able to collect mimonafshach, because either that lower shtar is correct, or, even if the lower star is pasul, the higher star is correct, and the higher star includes the lower star within it. So mimonafshach, he gets to collect the lower star. But even Rav Huna in this case will agree that one of the two shtarot is problematic, and therefore we have a safek. If we have a safek, then you pay the lower of the two. And it would seem that over here, Rav Chisda would agree to this, because mimonafshach, one of the two shtarot, are ksherim, and therefore Rav Huna and Rav Chisda seemingly would agree in this conclusion. Shnei malvin velo ve'echad, you have two creditors with a single debtor, ushnei shtarot, and you have two shtarot, hainu matnitin. That's the case of our Mishnah. You have two creditors that are going after a single individual, and each one of them has an independent relationship with them. That's the case here. The Chenvani is going after the Balabait, and the Po'alim are going after the Balabait. So you have two creditors making a claim against a debtor, and they have Shnei Shtarot, and they're two Shtarot. So one Shtar is signed by one set of Edim, one Shtar is signed by the other set of Edim. One of those two shtarot is possible, but we just don't know which one it is. In our Mishnah, we say each one of them takes a shuat to substantiate their claim, and they get both to collect. They get the double collection, and we'll do the same thing over here. And Rashi says that just like in our Mishnah, the same thing with our case over here. Each one of the malvin will be able to collect from this lovet, even though this lovet is getting hit with one shtar that is pasul. Nevertheless, each one independently can make the claim and come and collect from the lovet. Because we don't know which edut is shek over here. It's similar to our Mishnah. We don't know which one of the parties is lying, the Chenvani or the Po'alim. We allow both of them to collect. On the other hand, there are some Rishonim that say that the din here is exactly like the din in the Mishnah. It means that the creditors normally could collect with a shtar without a shvua. Here would have to substantiate it with a shvua because of the suspicion that one of the two shtarot is pasul, because you have edim that are possibly sheker on one of the two shtarot. And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Chananel, Hilkach Shnei Malvin Nishba'in V'Govim in Aloveh. Apo Pish V'Daya Chad Mehem Psula. Even though one of them clearly is problematic. K'mo Apoel Ben Chanish Shnei Nishba'in V'Notim Mibalabayit. Each of them has a star. We don't know which one of the two is Pasul. Similar to our Mishnah, which we don't know which of the two parties is lying. Is it the Chenvani or the Po'alim? And therefore we give them both rights of collection through a Shvua. And even though that would actually make it that Rav Chisda disagrees with the Mishnah, that the Mishnah is in essence a question in Rav Chisda. What you'd have to say is you have to differentiate the case of the Mishnah from the case over here. The case over here, it's clear that one of the two sets of Edim is Pasul, but in the case of the Mishnah, each party can make a claim to Kashrut by saying that they don't trust the Shvu'ah of the other party, or they were never instructed to worry about the other party, and therefore they can claim that they are still Kshirim, because whatever the other party says doesn't necessarily impact on them. Vedlovim umalvechad. You have two debtors with a single creditor, ushnei shtarot, and you have two documents over here, mai. In this case, what is the din? Gemara says, teku. That is unresolved. Now, for Rav Chisda, it's not a question. Rav Chisda lo mi baile. Rashi says, there's no question. Da'afilu b'shnei malvin ushnei lovin ushnei shtarot pasul. He says, even when you have two different loans, and two different parties. Over there he says everything is pasul misafek. Choshke mishnei lovin umal ve'achad. And certainly when there's a single creditor and two debtors, he's going to disqualify it. So Rav Chisda, it's not a question that that's disqualified over here. And neither shtar is valid. The question is, according to Rav Huna, who says that when you have the Edim testifying on different shtarot, then we look at each one independently. So that's definitely true when you're dealing with two different transactions, creditor A and debtor A, and creditor B and debtor B. There we would say both of them are kshirim. In the case where it was the single creditor and single debtor with both shtarot, he agrees that one of the two is pasul, and therefore you had a bala shtar is ala tachtona. Over here, by the case we have two debtors and a single creditor, and now you have two shtarot, what's the din? And Rashi explains this. Amar Rav Huna, b'zeh mi amrinan came into chad gabro. Since it's one individual that's bringing him, ma'ita lulu kaman, lo mizdak aginanle. We say to him, we're not going to deal with you. We know one of you two shtarot is false, and therefore we're not going to adjudicate the case at all. The man of shak v'shtar pasul balifaneinu. For sure, one of these two shtarot is pasul. Each debtor will say, it's my shtar, the one that you have that is false. So each one of them pushed back, and then Beit Din says, I don't know what to do in this case. Odilma came in shnei lovin, hu motzi, but maybe because there's two different parties here, two different debtors, zuba mi'ida, zuba mi'ida. Each one of them independently, and his shtar is testifying about. The two sets of edim are not testifying simultaneously. Each one is about a separate case. One about this debtor, and one about that debtor. And therefore, it would be qualified. In that case, we leave it as a teiku. We don't know what Rav Huna's position would be in this instance. Meiti Rav Huna Bar Yehuda. Echad Omer Guvoa Bet Mardot. We have Edim that are coming for Edut HaChodesh. And they're coming to testify about the moon. We asked them how high in the sky was the moon. So one of them says it was the height of two Mardot. Marda'a is the driver or the prodder that is used to drive the donkey. So Marda, you raise up the stick or the prodder to move the donkey. When they're talking about the height, they're saying, oh, it was two Marda'od high, meaning that when you look at it from here, you say two Marda'od high is the height of the moon. Bechadamar shalosh. And the other one says, no, it was three Marda'od high. Edutan kayemet. There, we don't consider the two edim to be contradicting each other. We assume that they're making an estimation mistake. Between two and three, it's not a big difference, and therefore we figure that their testimony is overlapping. If one of them says that it was three Mardot high, and the other one says it was five Mardot high, Edutan Bitela, then their testimony is disqualified because these two Edim are talking about different things. They're too far apart for us to say that it's just a mistaken estimation. But they can join another Edut. My love, Leidut Mamon. Sounds like here you can go. And each one of these Edim could take another aid, get together with them, and then testify in a monetary case. That would be against Rav Chista. Rav Chista says when you have Edim that are contradictory, both Edim become disqualified and they're not Edim anymore. Over here you were saying, oh, each one of these Edim, single aid, is disqualified because of their contradiction. And now we're allowing them to go testify with someone else about a different case. That sounds like Rav Huna, not like Rav Chista. Amarova, who ve'acher mitzarfim leidut acheret shel Rosh Chodesh. You misread it. Acheret here doesn't mean another case or a monetary case. It means in testimony about Rosh Chodesh. If a single aid again shows up, remember this is one aid and one aid. We're trying to put them together to get a dut Chodesh, and we can't because they are contradicting each other. If a third aid shows up and testifies like one of them, then we say davilu trei v'chad ve'in tevav shel achad b'makom shnayim. Then we say when the other aid comes along, he joins the aid that is corroborating his statement, and they become like a kat of two aidim versus a kat of one aid. In that case, they're going to trump. Two aidim always override one aid, and that's why they'll be qualified. Yes, in a different case, according to Rav Chista, they will be disqualified because they are aidim machishim. But if we get support for one of the two aidim here in the case, then that aid's integrity will be lifted in this particular case of Rosh Chodesh, and therefore they could be mitzareif then to make it Kiddush HaChodesh based on the testimony of the third aid, plus the one aid who originally said similar to this third aid. So, but if we get no more eidut, and you just have one aid and one aid, one saying three, one saying five, according to Rav Chista, if they go out into another case, and they want to join with an aid, they are considered to be eidim sulim, and they cannot testify in any other case. And the Rabbeinu Chananu concludes over here, V'kaimelan k'Rav Huna, the daika matanitin gavate, our Mishnah sounds like him, first of all, because we noted before, the Mishnah seems to be a stira for Rav Chista, even though we tried to answer that. Both Rav Chista Talmidu the Gabe Rav Huna. Rav Chista is Rav Huna's Talmid. And therefore, we're going to pass him like the Rebbe and not like the Talmid. And the Baal Yeh Tosafot also bring the fact that Rova and Rav Nachman also seemingly support that position of Rav Huna based on Rova's position in Bava Kamma and Makot that Eid Zomim is a chidushu. That Eid Zomim is a chidush, that why do we believe these Eidim and not the other Eidim? According to Rav Chisda, he wouldn't believe either set of Eidim, and that is the chidush. So it seems that Rava's position is relying on Rav Huna that says that each set of Eidim should be kasher independently, and the chidush is that we believe one over the other. And that seems to, again, support that position of Rav Huna. Okay, I'm going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Memchet Amud Aleph.